and welcome to another episode of Infection Control Matters. And this time I'm on a hospital property. And I'm going to chat to Mitch Clark, who's the Clinical Lead and Deputy Director of Infection Prevention at Nottingham University Hospitals NHS Trust. I think I've got that right, haven't I?
That's right, Martin.
Yeah. Okay. And what we're here going to be talking about is a paper recently published in the Journal of Hospital Infection. It's as an online first at the moment. And it's looking at a hospital-wide outbreak over quite a lengthy period of time with some interesting aspects. So, Mitch, could you kick off just by telling us a bit about the outbreak itself and then the investigations?
Well, it started around 5-6 years ago. It's 2016. Like many organisations, we'd probably been looking for CPE in patients and swabbing them just for a few years. Following national guidance, and at that stage we were just screening patients who had been admitted in hospitals abroad or in trusts in the UK where we knew they'd had problems. And so the first case that we ever identified was one who was based on at Nottingham University Hospitals, we actually have two very large campuses, about 5 miles apart. And the first case was at our Queen's Medical Centre campus on a surgical ward. And it was a clinical sample and was positive for CPE, was an NDM1, and we couldn't quite work out where it had come from. Patient didn't have any risk factors. And just about the same time, we then also had two other patients that we identified actually on our other campus on a respiratory ward, initially from one patient who was positive in their sputum and the second patient because we did ward screening that we identified and thought there was an element of cross-transmission. And we did, I think, all the normal things of screening patients, looking at the environment. And we did some environmental sampling and found it also in the sluice, which I don't think is that surprising. To the point where we actually ripped the sluice out and actually replaced it because we couldn't get rid of CPE.
Patients move between the two campuses fairly regularly, or would they maybe get admitted to one and then at another time get admitted to the other?
Generally, what we did with these cases are Queen's Medical Centre campus is more the acute, it's our major trauma unit, whereas the city campus is more chronic diseases, but we also have things like our oncology wards, etc. So you do get some movement, but we did, as ever, went through patients' timelines and there was no crossover between any of the patients and no connection either between the two sites. We eventually got these sent off for typing and they came back as something called NOTPED2, which it was seen as being unique to Nottingham. So it had not been seen anywhere else in the country.
Okay.
So it was unique to us.
Okay. Was there a thought that had been imported from abroad at some stage then?
Well, one of the patients, the second case that we got on our respiratory ward, we thought they had been to another hospital, but not one that we knew had got problems.
Yeah.
So we did actually consider that they could have been the index case in that situation. However, once we get further down with the outbreak, we don't think that necessarily is the case.
Okay.
But just on that specific outbreak, we did actually publish a paper of our findings and what we did. Go forward a few months and we picked up some other cases. Primarily, we had a cluster associated with our clinical haematology ward. And again, we couldn't quite understand where these cases had come from. No risk factors of any of the patients. And again, start off with clinical samples. And then we started doing routine screening of all patients in our clinical haematology. And again, we're scratching our heads trying to work out exactly what was happening. There was no crossover again with patients. And we did some investigations and, again, environmental sampling, and we found it actually in the drains and also in the kitchens. And
what surfaces in the kitchen, just out of interest?
So that was mainly around the sink drain. Okay. So we actually found the seal of the sink drain had been was peeling a bit.
Okay.
So we did that. Interestingly enough, in the drains, one thing that we've learned from this is actually distance of drain once they actually flow away. Because it was a hematology ward, we had patients with a lot of hair loss.
Oh, right.
So what it would do is actually block the drains and then feed back up. So that seemed to be a risk factor.
Oh, yeah, because work from Porton showed that poorly draining sinks means more splashing.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I think through all of these, we picked up little bits of learning through that. And again, we sent these samples off and came back as this NOTPED 2, this NDM1, which was slightly, we couldn't really understand. And then we had another couple of patients on another ward. Again, this is back onto the Queen's Medical Center campus that we couldn't again quite connect up. Again, none of them had any particular risk factors. So what we did was again did various actions on the ward as you would not do any normal outbreak, and again sent the samples off for typing, and they came back as this NOTPED 2. So we couldn't really understand what was happening. We had two large campuses, no obvious crossover of patients, no obvious crossover of staff or specialities. It was spread far and wide, really. And to the point that we actually got the Health Protection Agency in to say, can you give us any pointers as to what's actually happening? And unfortunately, we didn't particularly get any... I don't think they came up with anything new that we would be able to sort of develop.
It doesn't surprise me because you guys, the number of outbreak reports you've published over the years, you guys are pretty good at going through outbreaks.
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
And I think it is important that with every outbreak, we did go through methodically with each one,
doing the
best practice. So looking at the epidemiology, looking at the environment and all those sort of factors that you would normally look at. And it was one of our microbiologists who actually thought, could there be a food route? Is that something that's actually causing the problem? Mm. Noting that we picked up from the kitchen.
Yeah.
Which made us wonder about food processing.
I mean, people's guts become colonised somehow, don't they?
Exactly.
I mean, we are what we eat.
And like many organisations, we use a cook-chill system where it's all processed in our central processing unit, which is on one site. The food is actually cooked over a few days for the whole week. It's then chilled and then reheated at ward level.
Okay.
So we knew that we'd got one area where all the food was processed, including things like salads. The only items that weren't done within the CPU were things like sandwiches and actually staff food as well. So we thought we'd have a look at the central processing unit. And at this point, we did have a clinical scientist who was working with us who was really great in looking at the environment. And we decided to do some sampling within the environment. Mm. And we initially looked in the kitchen, but we also thought we'd look at staff toilets as well. And actually from the floor of both the male and female toilets, we actually found this CPE that once we sent off was this NDM1. Mm. So that suggests that we've either got staff with carriage or there are pieces of equipment that have become contaminated.
I do, however, remember your MRSA sock paper and showing that whatever's on the floor, people are going to walk it around anyway. So it might have been somebody walking in a splash by a sink and then wandering off to the staff loo.
Exactly. Yeah. And one thing that we did find, and this shows you how much you'd sometimes look at things, we were looking at how the toilets actually, once you press the flush, but we actually found that they ran around the bowl and some actually fell out of toilet bowl as well.
That beats plume then.
So we did find issues. And then we decided to look more at the equipment that was being used for cleaning. So we looked at the mops that we used. And then we also found that there was a floor scrubber that's actually used routinely on the floors in the central processing unit. And both the mop and the floor scrubber actually, again, tested positive for the NDM1, NOTPEP2. So what we were able to do is actually identify a relationship with the environment where the food is being processed directly to the patients, and all this food would have gone to those patient areas that we've described.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the floor scrubber is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because they're not actually designed to decontaminate the floor as such. They're just to polish it up and buff it up, really, aren't they?
A lot of our floors, what we find is they were generally used in areas with large floors, used an awful lot in our operating theatres. And essentially what they do is throw out a lot of water, swill it around, and then suck it back up.
Yeah.
And that's essentially all they do.
Yeah.
But they can be good at getting better finishes in certain areas. And there are lots of different manufacturers that people will be aware of, ones that are, you can actually even sit on as well, that are used for corridors.
Yeah.
So they are widely used within healthcare.
Yeah, and airports and anywhere else with flat impervious services. Yeah. So what part of the floor scrubbers did you sample and what did you get from that aspect?
So what we decided to do is actually look at the tanks. So these are the reservoirs where the water is actually, where you pour water in and then it actually pushes it out, gets sucked back in, and just see where the water is.
Separate tanks, though.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
If you look at the manufacturer's guidance, it's very clear from what they say is that you have to store them dry. You actually have to lift them up as well. So you actually drain the fluid back. So the idea is that you're storing them dry.
Yeah.
Invariably, what we did find in many of our clinical areas when we looked further afield is that they were not being properly stored, not being maintained as well as they should have been.
Yeah.
And
questions
around staff knowledge and training about actually being able to do that.
Okay. I mean, did the manufacturer's instructions then give any instruction at all about decontaminating these tanks? Because you won't be able to physically get in them to clean them.
No, that's right. So we did look at decontamination. So what chemicals basically could we put through them to actually decontaminate them?
Mm.
And nothing seemed to work from what we were trying. And we did actually then test our machines throughout the organisation and actually found others that were also contaminated, not just with this NDM1. I think we found an OX48 as well.
Yeah.
So we did find other organisms within them as well, including this same strain.
You're virtually almost sampling floors then, aren't you?
Yeah.
By sampling the machine.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting to know how it got. So you found it in the clean tank, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
So that's the worrying thing. You could sort of expect to find it in the dirty, but how did it get into the clean? Is there a design flaw, or do you think that's practice?
I think it's difficult, and I think that's something that needs to be explored as to whether they should be used. It was interesting that between our two sites, they seem to be used more in one site than the other, and used more widely. So at one of our sites, they were never actually used on wards, but on one campus, they were used extensively on wards and the main place that we found actually is operating theatres, as well. So we thought actually what was happening is that these machines were actually contaminating the environment and probably getting into the food chain within our food production.
Mm.
There's a number of simple things that we did around cleaning the environment, and also what we did stop is things like fresh fruit, salad, fruits and salads actually being prepared in this area as well, because we thought that was a higher risk as well.
It's no heat process involved, is it?
Yeah. And what we then did is contact the HPA to see if they could do some further work on these floor scrubbers to describe exactly what the mechanism of potential contamination is and is there anything that we could do to prevent these causing problems in the future, that although the vast majority of them were negative, we obviously saw that there was a risk that these would become positive. What we also did find is around traceability, that we did find some being used in clinical areas and then being moved to other areas. So the one that was used in the food processing unit probably had been used at some point in a clinical area as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so what have you done about it now? Have you decided, have you said, we've got to put these into specific areas and they stay within that area, or have you gone down a different decontamination route?
So the ones that were contaminated, we ultimately condemned because we couldn't decontaminate them in any way.
Okay.
What we've tried to do is rationalise where they're actually used, so avoiding as much as possible from being used in clinical areas. It's useful to go through what they found when we sent them to the Health Protection, and they actually tested them in port and down to look at the mechanism and what was actually happening by putting various saddle plates and air samplers around as they used the machines. And what they found ultimately is there's greater contamination when you actually get to the end of a pathway and you need to turn the machine around. You slightly lift it up as you turn it.
Right.
And so the contamination increased.
Right.
And there was also a suggestion that rather than it just being aerosolization, that it was actually flicking contamination up to a high level, because they also tried at height as well.
Okay.
So as a result of that, what we also said is that where floor scrubbers are actually used, even though we knew what these were free from any contamination, in, for example, theatres, the process would normally be at the end of a theatre list, staff would clean the surfaces down. Overnight, the cleaning staff would then come in and clean the floor. And what we were able to see from the information putting down is actually the high surfaces that you've cleaned may have then been contaminated overnight.
Right.
So we did change the process that if floor scrubbers are used, actually, you do the floor scrubbing, but actually you then do the high surfaces as well to reduce contamination at height, if that does actually happen.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of it was rationalising. And I think the other important thing is staff education in maintaining them, how they keep them.
Yeah.
And although we still do get variability of practice, that's one of the important aspects that we actually implemented as well.
Yeah, I mean, because I suspect in their training is, if you leave these things wet, it's going to grow biofilm and we'll get bugs. That would never have come into it. So they don't really know why they've got to do that. And therefore, they might think, well, if I leave it prepped and ready to go, it's easier for the next person without thinking, sitting there for 24 hours in a warm hospital is probably not a good thing.
It's difficult to rationalise exactly. You may not understand the contamination that you've got as well.
So. No. And have you spoken to any of the manufacturers at all about this? And are they, because with respect to them, they might have designed that thinking, you know, we're going to get biofilm in here and potentially we could spread multi-resistant gram negatives around when they designed it. Because the design maybe would have been tinkered over the years, but they haven't really been thinking about, we need to incorporate this into our design. And if they did do that now, it's probably going to be 5 or 6 years before you saw a new machine anyway. Have they said anything to you?
So I think it's important to emphasise that we did try. We had machines from at least 3 different manufacturers, all that had contamination to some degree.
So
it wasn't one particular manufacturer. Yeah. So the design issues were throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to emphasise.
Yeah.
We did have some discussions with manufacturers. I don't think that was necessarily that productive.
Okay.
And I think going forward, we have also had discussions since with UKHSA about how we actually progress this as well.
Yeah.
Because I think one thing that we've described and we've discussed, actually, there should be an alert going out to organisations to tell that this is the experience that we've had. And these are the lessons that you should consider, and making sure that your practices are actually in place and that they're improved. And also this rationalisation about where do you actually use them. So, for example, you wouldn't want them on a critical care unit.
No. And I don't think I would want them to be going into a room a bay of six and doing the area around the sink first and then doing the rest of the bay, because the area around the sink is most likely to be contaminated, the floor, and then they're just going to move it everywhere.
I agree. And overall, what we've tried to do is actually remove them from most of the patient areas. And really, it ends up being sort of more corridors and large, more general areas.
Traffic areas. Okay. Well, really interesting, Mitch. Thank you very much. And highlighted a new issue. It was it's something that really made me think, what can we do about this? And it'd be interesting to see from our colleagues in the cleaning industry how they're going to cope with this, because they do like a shiny floor, because it gives a really good impression of cleanliness. And maybe we'll have to come up with something else. But appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
No problem. Pleasure.